Hey team, welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast Pediatric Mini-Series. Hey team, welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast Pediatric Mini-Series. Today's episode of the Pediatric Mini-Series is about grief and debrief for difficult pediatric jobs. And I'm joined once again with Dr. Andy Tagg for this fantastic mini-series that we've got going on for a deep dive into each of these topics. So today it's going to be focused mainly on debriefing, breaking bad news, and looking after our own well-being in regards to these difficult jobs. So thank you so much, Andy, for jumping on yet again. It's a pleasure to have you.
Of course, Alex. Lovely to see you again.
It's lovely to see you too again, Andy. So we're going to kick today's episode off quite quickly. So I guess the definition of a difficult pediatric job is going to really be dependent on the person and the type of job that they're going to. So I guess it's something that we're not going to be able to necessarily define, but how do we start to have these difficult conversations, particularly around these difficult jobs?
So I think it's really important to recognize that, you know, we all do have those different responses to hard situations, whether dealing with adults or kids or young babies. And some of us will put things in a box and move on and deal with maybe a child death or a seriously injured child. Or as we were talking last time, a little about a child that's been injured by a parent or carer. And we'll put that in a box and get on with our job and move on. And sometimes we may never unpack it. It may be like that scene in Indiana Jones with a massive warehouse full of hard emotions and things that are hard to deal with. But sometimes those tricky emotions then leak out both at work and at home, and they can have a really profound impact on us, both physically and mentally. And so trying to deal with those situations preemptively, recognizing that you've been through a potentially tricky situation and talking about it with trusted friends, colleagues, professionals, then it can make it a lot easier to manage and not negatively impact on you. I think we've all been to jobs and we've all looked after patients that we remember, and we will always remember them, and that's completely okay. But when they're waking you up at 3 o'clock in the morning, when they're stopping you being able to do your work, when they're making you have arguments with your friends or your partners or your crewmates, then it's time to think about doing something about it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fantastic point. And I think it's really important to reiterate just how crucial it is to maintain and be proactive with your mental health, particularly surrounding this job, because there is just an accumulation of constant traumas that not many people in their day-to-day life generally have to see. And there is a ton of resources and podcasts on this podcast in relation to PTSD, managing mental health and ensuring sort of more of a positive well-being. So please check those out if you haven't listened to those yet. I can always put those into the show notes as well for you. Now, Andy, in regards to a debrief, plenty of our listeners who may already be in the job or have been on placement may have been involved in a debrief before. And some people have experienced a really good debrief that was really effective and helpful. And some people may have experienced some that just weren't very effective and just probably a little bit more on the detrimental side. So how do we unpack a debrief? How do we make a debrief a good debrief and one that is effective?
So I think we're thinking really there are going to be two types of debriefs here with any sort of tricky child case. That hot debrief, and we're really just trying to process and deal with emotions and make sure we're in a safe space at that time. And then perhaps a colder debrief further down the line, we've had a chance to, you know, deal with some of that emotional aspect, and then we get to ask questions and often receive more information. I think the first thing you need to do is be willing to ask. And as much as I would like to say that every line manager is going to ask, hey, do you need to chat about this case? Often our initial response is, yeah, we're fine. We don't want to talk about it. Okay. And just move on. But actually recognizing that sometimes it's okay just to sit there and say, yeah, this is really tough. I really felt uncomfortable looking after this child. I found it really hard managing these parents or these carers. I found it a really tricky, confronting scene to go to. And it's hard to be vulnerable in front of other people, but recognizing that sometimes by showcasing the fact that you're willing to talk, it means your crew, your partner that you're buddied up with is also much more likely to want to share things with you. And sometimes, we've all done the debrief down the pub at the end of a shift where you've had a crappy day, you just want to talk about it with someone. And that's okay if that's what you need at the time. But sometimes you want to be able to have a more sort of structured approach with people who are outside of the situation. And maybe your line manager, maybe a trusted colleague, at work. Or, sometimes it may be that you just want to have a chat with the doctor who's looking after that patient in hospital or has been dealing with them. Say, hey, I found this really tough. Do you mind if we have a chat about it? And most of us, we're really, really happy to be involved in that conversation, really, because we can be this passionate outsider who's got a little bit of medical knowledge, because sometimes that really helps, because we can at least empathize with the situation that you've been in.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some really great points in there that I'd love to sort of dissect with you a bit further. But it's interesting you say that in terms of talking to the doctor or whoever's looking after that patient when you get to hospital, because I feel like we do that a lot for adult patients. If they're in resus, you follow up, you find out what's going on. Personally, I don't do that as much with pediatrics, and I think that would be a really great tool going forward to really consolidate either one, my own learning, and two, how I sort of my processing my emotions. So I think that's a really great piece of advice.
Yeah, it's a great way of finding out if you're right as well. I mean, you don't know, you'll see a kid, and often you've seen them right at that point one in time. We've had seen them over a prolonged period of time in the paediatric emergency department. We may have more information as to what's going on because we managed to get some more collateral from family, from friends. We've got some test results back. Hopefully, it'll give us a bit more information. And then we may find out what's going on, and they're admitted to the ward or the PICU, or they go to the operating theatre, and we'll have that feedback as to what's happened to them. And I really strongly encourage your listeners to really, take a ER number or a medical record number. Next time you're in shift, go and ask some friendly doctors on shift, say, hey, do you mind finding out what happened about this patient? And certainly in my hospital, I strongly emphasize, our paramedics to get in touch with me to find out what's going on with the patients. And you're right, it's a great way of learning if you made the right calls. And also, it helps sort of close some of those emotional cognitive loops that are going around in your head. We always think, oh my God, did I make the right decision? Did I do the right thing with this child or adult as well? And unless you know and you can find an answer, it's just going to whirr around. And that again is going to keep you, it's the sort of thing that keeps you up at night. Did I make the right decision? Am I going to make the right decision if I see a child like this the next time?
That's a really fantastic piece of advice. So I think even I'll be taking that on board going forward as well. Now, in regards to the hot debrief, what makes a hot debrief effective? This is generally straight after an incident, and it's something that we'll be utilizing quite a lot in the pre-hospital environment, or should be utilized quite a lot in the pre-hospital environment.
So I think you need to make sure you're in a safe physical space to be able to perform this debrief first and foremost. You don't want to be doing this around, in a crime scene, for example. You need to make sure that everyone involved is away from the area that they've been treating the patient. And you have to have consent from everyone involved to be in, to take part. It's really easy to think, oh, I'm just going to ask everyone how they're feeling without asking their permission to ask that question, because they may still be processing some really complex emotions and thoughts. And so if I was that line manager, I'd say, hey, validate listening and validating the event first of all. I can imagine a lot of people would find this scenario really confronting, normalizing that it's a tough space that people are in. A lot of people find it really helpful to talk about it, just to get to process things and get some of those emotions off their chest. Do you think that's something that you would like to get, to try? Why don't we get together in the tea room and have a chat? And you want to be able to do that. And ideally, you want everyone involved in that process to do it relatively quickly after an event. And one of the challenges is, if it's an event that's involved multiple services, so you've got the fire brigade, the police, Paramedics, you don't all get together. You all do your own separate things. It'd be lovely to be able to say, hey, here's the police, the first on scene police officer is involved. Here's the fire crew that cut the kid out of the car. They're also part of the process. Here's the ambos who are involved as part of that hot debrief of what's happening. And it doesn't happen like that because everyone has their own little thing. So all you can do then is say, okay, let's get together and chat about what's going on. And then really it's a case, if you're that manager, and say, asking open-ended questions, not about what happened, but how do you feel? How are you feeling about what's going on? Normalizing and allowing and validating any concerns, because it can be completely normal to be angry, to be blank, to feel, scared, to feel guilty, to feel ashamed. All of those emotions are perfectly valid and perfectly normal. And it can feel, sometimes if you're a boss, what you want to do is jump in and fix things. And actually, it's a time where really you just need to let people talk and say how they feel and not rush to fix. I think going around the circle, or as it were, allowing everyone to have their own equally valid opinions. And then really, once people have had a chance to get those emotions off their chest, it's a case of saying, that sounds really, really tough. And those feelings are completely normal. And then pointing people in the direction of the appropriate resources. So that's their employee assistance program, their local psychologists, whatever they have, if things are getting tough. And what I really like is the idea of saying, I know this is really tough. I'm going to check in with you in a week's time. Make sure they've got my phone number if there's an issue, and say, but please feel free to call me if there's any problems, before, in the meantime, or if this is waking up or making it really hard for you to get up and go to work, just call me a call. And often it depends on the type of case involved. And certainly if when we have, horrendous events and, deaths of children in hospital, I will check in on the doctors on the day and I'll check in on the day afterwards, because sometimes you don't really process things until you've gone home, spent time with your own family or on your own, depending on your circumstances. And then only then do you really realize the sort of enormity of what's happened and what you've been a part of. And, you would have been part of some pivotal points in people's lives. And yes, you're just a walk-on part, but it's still a very, very important part that you've played. And I think we need to acknowledge that.
So what about the people that don't necessarily feel like they can be vulnerable in front of the people that they're around in that hot debrief? What kind of advice do you have for those people?
Well, I think it's really important that whoever's running that debrief says it's okay to say nothing, and acknowledges that, because, you're allowing people to sit in silence and sit in space. And sometimes that's what people need. I think if you're that person who does not feel comfortable or potentially safe sharing your emotions in front of colleagues, and that's completely understandable sometimes, then that's okay. And I think what you need to do is figure out who you can share those with. And it may be your partner at home. It may be you go for a walk with the dog and you tell the dog what's been going on. And sometimes that's all you need to do. It may be that you just write it down in a journal. It may be that you actually see a professional, you see a psychologist or a counselor. But it's important to share those emotions. And I've known of people who will get their emotions out by writing or drawing or scribbling, or they'll play, Call of Duty and talk to someone over their headsets and tell them exactly what's going on, because that's the way they do things. And it can be quite confronting trying to talk to someone opposite you about what's going on, as opposed to walking side by side. And I've had the best conversations when you're sitting next to someone, either you're in the car or in the truck and you're driving and someone is next to you, because they don't have to make eye contact to talk to you, or you're going for a walk with someone. And sometimes that was an approach. So if I was doing a one-on-one debrief with someone, I'd say, hey, let's just go for a walk around the block. Let's go get a coffee. Let's go get a cup of tea. And rather than the debrief occurring sitting opposite each other on a table, it actually occurs on the walk to where you're going.
That's a really great point. I didn't think of that before. In regards to the people that may have thought that the job didn't go as well as it could have, if there were some challenges along the way, and they don't agree with, say, potentially the way that the treatment plan occurred or what had happened on scene, how do they feel sort of comfortable bringing that up within the hot debrief?
And I think the hot debrief is probably not the time to bring that up. I think it's okay to, in the hot debrief, say, yeah, I felt really uncomfortable with some of the decision making. I felt really uncomfortable with how things went, and just stop at that point. Because, there's the thinking and the feeling part are very, very different. And sometimes, you want to get those the hot debrief, really, that time is to get rid of your emotions, dump those out. recognize what went, that things went badly, and leave it at that. And then what I would normally say is, part of my personal process then when I leave is just write it all down. Write down the events that I saw as I saw them happen. And the challenge is then that if you ask five people what happened, you'll get six different responses. And so actually then your master debriefer's role is to tease apart fact from fiction and fact from viewpoint. And so what you see may have happened, you may have said, thought, oh, it took ages to get an IV cannula in. I tried five times and I couldn't get it. And I'm sure that's what caused this child to have a cardiac arrest. Whereas someone else who's watching from the scene may say, actually, you tried three times and it took you 90 seconds, not 5 minutes. But time distorts when you're in any of these sort of stressful situations. And you need multiple viewpoints to be able to get to what the truth is. And some of that truth you will only know with further information as to what's happened to that child in hospital, for instance, what's happened, getting information from the police as to what's happened to them at the scene beforehand. And we all have this sort of hero complex in medicine that we want to save people. And it's hard to recognize you can't save everyone. But you will always go into every single situation thinking that you can save someone, you can save everyone. And it's that if only thinking that makes it really, really tricky. And so the commonest sort of emotions that come out are either anger at themselves, self, because you've not done something correctly, or anger directed to others, thinking, why did they let this happen? Or it's guilt and shame, oh my goodness, I should have done this, I should have done that, I should be better, the hospital system should be better, they shouldn't be ramped, all of these things. These are completely normal emotions to feel in these situations. And sometimes, we need to blow off that steam before we can be rational and figure out actually what's the truth of what happened.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you for that, Andy. I think we've pretty much well covered debrief now for this episode, in regards particularly to the hot debrief. If we move on now to breaking bad news for pediatric jobs, this is something that's quite challenging, not something that I guess we'd have to do very often. And so I definitely don't like this part of the job. I don't like having to break bad news. But I think it's really important. So, how do we break bad news effectively?
I think it's a little dependent on what you mean by effective. If you want them to recognize that their child is critically unwell and may die, I think that's really the most important thing. And I think those are almost the words I would say. You pick up, you're scooping a kid up, you're going to get them to hospital as quickly as possible. And it's recognizing that the parents are going to be stressed out of their heads. And it's a case of stating to them, it's that warning shot across the bows, your child is very unwell, critically unwell. We need to get to the hospital as quickly as possible. And then just stop. Allow parents to process what you're saying. The tendency is whenever we're doing breaking bad news conversations or difficult conversations in any type, is to give too much information and not allow people time to process. So it's a case of saying, and I use the broken record technique in this sort of cases, your child is very unwell. We're doing everything we can. We need to get to the hospital as quickly as possible. And just repeat, your child is very unwell. We need to get to the hospital as quickly as possible. And just leave it at that. And parents will recognize that you're doing the best job you can, given the circumstances, and that your focus is on that child. The challenge is, and having been a parent on the receiving end of bad news, is that those parents will remember everything you say for the rest of their lives. I know that sounds like it's a super high stakes conversation for you as the paramedic, but then the most important thing you can do is to be as kind and empathic and as clear and unambiguous as possible. So rather than giving people false hope, oh, I'm sure everything's going to be okay, just say, your child is really unwell. We're doing everything we can. We're making sure they're not in distress. We're getting into hospital. Help is on its way. If you're waiting for your advanced care paramedics or the helicopter to come. And then make sure, as much as you can, the parent or caregiver can spend as much time with their child whilst you're waiting for help to arrive, and encourage them to hold hands. As long as they're putting themselves in danger, get them to hold their kid's hand whilst you're transporting them. because they will remember that. They won't remember you. They won't remember your face. They may remember your voice, but they won't. They will remember the fact that you were there, and you moved their hands. You moved the side of the gurney so they could actually hold their kid's hand while you're transporting.
Absolutely, and in particular, maybe the cardiac arrest where that may not be possible due to how many people might be around the child and undertaking all the interventions. How do you sort of adapt to that process as well?
I think it's parents know. Honestly, I think parents can see what you're doing at the time. They've seen enough television and they know exactly how unwell their child is. They won't want to believe it, but they will 100% know, and they will know you are doing your best. And if you have spare resources and spare humans in the way, and you're, you know, working on a kid, I would try and, if you can, have someone dedicated to looking after that parent, holding their hand, explaining what's going on whilst they're doing it, explaining why CPR is being done, explaining what an IO is, because it can be incredibly confronting, you know, seeing someone come out with essentially a power tool, push it straight into their kid's leg, and the kid not flinching, you know, explaining what's going on and why things are happening. You know, we're going to put a tube down the throat to help the child breathe. We're going to do this. You know, we're going to put a needle in the leg. It can be really noisy and it'd be quite confronting. That's okay. They won't feel what's happening. This is really important. So we can give them some, you know, life-saving medication. And have, if you have someone sort of you can allocate to that role before you get to the scene, if you know your second crew going to a scene, that'd be wonderful. We don't always have that luxury. But if you get a chance for a quick, you know, sit rep and a check in and allocating someone to look after the parents. And certainly we do that in hospital. We'll have a social worker or a doctor look after the parents. And it's really as important in a pre-hospital environment.
So I feel like we've gone through quite a lot today, and I really appreciate everything you've gone through, Andy. So now that we're coming to the end of this episode, is there anything in particular that you think we may have missed or you really want to touch base with before we end this one and move on to our final episode?
So these situations are really tough. They're hard for you as the healthcare professional, but they are ultimately so much harder for the parent whose child has passed away. And you are a small blip in their life journey, and you will remember, hopefully will remember, all of those, you know, children that you've seen who've had such horrendous things happen to you. But you can make things just a tiny bit better for the parents by treating them with kindness and empathy along the way.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Andy. I really appreciate you jumping on for this episode of Grief and Debrief for Difficult Pediatric Jobs.
See you next time, Alex.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast Pediatric Mini-Series. If you want to leave us a review, we'd be grateful for that, as it really does help. And if you want to reach out to us, please do so on Instagram, Facebook, or via email, which is thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com. So we'll see you in the next one.